Fantastic. Thank you. Down a little bit still, Dave. Thank you. Getting a bit of echo. Hello. Wow. Thank you very much for coming. I'm honored and privileged by your presence. Always good to come here. And I was saying earlier on that someone was asking, why are you here? And I was saying, well, this is where I come at least once a year to sing and dance. But that's, of course, a metaphor. You know that, don't you? I'd empty the room very quickly if I did actually sing and I did actually dance. So it's useful just to give you a bit of background about me, especially for those who are here for the first time or connecting with me for the first time. And my story usually goes back around 35 years now, when I woke up one day and realized I was very stressed out. And at this point, I usually ask everyone, anyone here do stress? Hands up those who do stress. Anyone? Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. If you don't put your hand up, I don't believe you. This is London, after all, isn't it? Took me an hour and a half to get from Gunnersbury here this evening, so this is London. I used to live here. I lived here for about 17 years, and I decided to go to the quietude of the country, and I've been there ever since, so it's quite a contrast now to come back into the smoke, as it's called sometimes. So I woke up that day and realized I can't do this anymore. I was very unhappy. And so I began searching outside and inside to work out what I have to change or what has to change in my life. And very quickly I began to realize the one thing no one ever teaches us at any stage in our life, in a conscious way at least, and that's something called self-understanding. And if I don't understand me, then I can't manage me. And if I can't manage me, then I can't manage the stuff around me. And the stuff around us every day are not the three R's, but the four R's. The four R's called responsibilities, relationships, roles, and resources. And every day we encounter these areas of our life. And if I'm not understanding how I work, how am I going to understand how to interact in these four areas? So I realized I have to go back to school. And so I went back to school. Not academic school, but you know the real school in life, the only school in life. Some people say life is the school. But actually the true school is your consciousness. Because if you notice, if you're aware, you'll notice everything begins in your consciousness. Your thinking, your visions, your decisions, your learning, your unlearning, everything happens first. Everything you do in life happens first in your consciousness. For example, tonight, you sat at home and you had a thought to come here. And here you are. And that began where? As a thought and a decision in your consciousness. And the one thing they don't teach us in school is how to think. How to make really good decisions. And when you can't make really good decisions, then you're faced with a number of choices. Does anyone get a bit anxious when they're faced with lots of choices? Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of the marks of the modern world. Is too much choice and not enough time to discern what's the right thing to do. So I kind of was searching around looking for something to help me sort of wake up and manage my life a bit more better. And one day I picked up the Bible for all known international wisdom, otherwise known as the Yellow Pages. And I let my fingers do the walking. And it walked into the Paja Yoga Center. And I thought, Paja Yoga, that sounds like pajama yoga. Haven't tried that yet. Sounds like fun. So I phoned the Paja Yoga Center and it was a misprint. It should have been the Raja Yoga Center. And that is where you are now. You're in a Raja Yoga Center. And Raja Yoga is just a name. It's like a label, really, for the development of self-understanding. And that's why this place exists. So I've been kind of coming to one of these kinds of places for about 35 years. Not because I'm attached to the place, but because of what happens here. And what happens here is people who are really serious about wanting to understand themselves and live their life more I guess, happily, effectively, live their life a little bit more fun, they come here. So I come here because I want to connect with people who are kind of interested in that territory. And so that's why I'm here tonight. That's why I'm still coming back after 35 years. So tonight, I thought it might be useful to look at one particular aspect of self-understanding, in as much as it's something that many people believe they have to develop, that we have to develop ourselves. And a kind of discovery I made a few years ago is that actually you don't. It's the other way around. It's a question of if you want to know and understand yourself with greater clarity, with greater wisdom, then I have to stop. Get rid of the idea of, hey, I have to grow, I have to develop, I have to be something more than I am now. And so that's what I'd like to kind of lay before you tonight, exactly why undevelopment is the case, and maybe a little bit of how-to as well. So I've split the evening into three sections. Section number one is all about unlearning and why it's essential now to unlearn a lot, if not everything. That might be another seminar. And then the second section is about growth and development and why it's wise to free yourself from the urge to develop yourself. And the third section is about undoing. And that's about undoing the many habits and traits and tendencies that have developed since you were knee-high to a grasshopper. Do you remember those days when you were knee-high to a grasshopper? Because that's when the programming went in. That's when the conditioning took place. And that's what we kind of pay the price for in later life. So first of all, let's look at the whole idea of unlearning. And what do I mean by unlearning? Well, in those young and formative years, we absorb and assimilate, without really being consciously aware of it, a whole raft of beliefs. And these are not just cultural or religious or they're beliefs that we find in every context of every area of everybody's life. Let me give you a few examples and how these beliefs are, in a sense, misleading. They mislead us and they kind of sabotage our ability to be content, to be proactive, to be who we are. The first one is around, very common one, a favorite one actually, is around time. And the one thing that you look at more often usually than other human beings. And that one thing is, I saw some of you looking at it already. You know, every time you look at one of these, it means you want to be somewhere else, really. So the belief that we learn is that this is time. But it's not. It's just a clock. It's a machine. We invented the machine. But now we bow down to the machine and we allow the machine to dictate our life, to dictate where we should be, how fast we should get there, how good is the latest product, how quick and efficient. Well, anyone here got a mobile phone? Anyone here upgraded their phone pretty regularly? No, yeah, the hands are not going up very fast. I don't think I believe you again, actually. And when we upgrade any piece of technology, then the one thing it has to be next time is faster and faster and faster. And so we believe this is time, but actually this is just a way of measuring our experience of the space between events. You know, it's just our way to try and measure that. And that's why we invented this. This was invented a long time ago, many revolutions ago. And so today it dominates our life to such an extent that because we can measure, we think we've got control of the measure of time. The next thought is, how can we make it move faster and faster? And that's what we all experience today, is more events in the same amount of clock time. Yeah, but this is not time, this is just a measurement, just a machine. Real time, well, probably the most popular seminar in the world today is something called time management. Anyone been on a time management course? And so, yes, see, quite a few of them already. And the reason why we go on a time management course is because we feel we're under pressure and we need help. And what are we really saying? We're saying to the person that we're listening to about time management is, what do I give my attention to first? Yeah. That's why time management is really attention management. Does that make sense? What do I give my attention to first? And why should I give my attention to this before that? And then that before this? Yeah. So if time management is attention management, then what is attention? Attention, when your attention goes somewhere, who goes somewhere? You go somewhere. So attention management is self-management. So time management is self-management, which means time is what you are. Get it? No one taught you that, did they, when you were young? Time is what I am. That's why when you have 100 things to do in a day, the day goes on. Happens very quickly. When you have one thing to do during the day goes so slowly. Is that right? Because your experience is something you create. So as long as we believe this is time, then we're always racing against the clock and we're giving life to illusions about time. What's the big illusion about time? If you hurry up, we'll save time. If we do it later, there'll be more time. Quickly, we're running out of time. Sorry, not true. You never run out of time. And if time runs out, where did it go? Did you see it go somewhere? Doesn't work. This is a very deep set of beliefs or illusions, depending on how you want to frame them, that we learn to live by. And they become how we create stress, pressure for ourselves. The clock doesn't give you pressure, it's ourselves. So the second arena or context in which we learn a certain belief that's going to sabotage our entire life is around stress, actually. And it's one of my favorites, and if you've been here before, I usually mention this at least once. And this is the idea that someone else is responsible for your stress. Yeah, I see a few of you going like this. Or are you going like this? No. It's not true, is it? Because who's responsible for your stress? Your feelings of pressure, your feelings of anger, your feelings of fear. Who's responsible? Hello? Just say, I am. Thank you. If I can get you to confess it at least once, it's a start. So this is the idea that I'm totally 100% responsible for everything I think and feel at all times. But of course, the belief that we grow up with is that it's not me, it's them. And this is the belief of the victim. This is how we make ourselves a victim of other people, circumstances, the government, even the weather. When you wake up in the morning and say, what a grotty day, what are you saying? You're saying, I'm the victim of the weather. The weather is more powerful than me. No. Unfortunately, no. Maybe more powerful than your body, but not you. But I'll come back to that. The third area, context, aspect of our life, I guess, where we absorb just one belief, actually, and it kind of affects a lot of people. It's the area of work. Do you remember the first day you went to work? Do you remember the first day you went to your new job? You went, yes, fantastic, isn't that wonderful? Oh, I'm really looking forward to it. And then the second day, and the third day, and the fourth day, and the fifth day. And then 3 weeks later, you woke up with that thought, oh God, not another day. I have to go to work. It's the only time we talk to God, isn't it? That's a joke, by the way. And so this is the idea, this is the belief that work should make me happy, that I should feel fulfilled by my job, that I should be satisfied through the work that I do. Is that right? Do you know that one? Yeah, and we spend much of our life looking for the job that's going to make me feel satisfied, fulfilled, and happy. But actually, the reality is the other way around. It's not the work that gives me satisfaction, it's what I give to the work. Yeah. Do you ever notice when you're in the process of creating anything that you lose all track of our old friend? Because you're totally absorbed in the creative process. And the joy of creation is not coming at the achievement at the end. The joy of being creative is in the journey. Do you see it? Exactly. So our work, our jobs, our tasks, our positions, whatever you want to call it, is not designed to give me satisfaction. It's just an opportunity to me to give of myself in the most creative way I can. That's what I usually say to people anyway. It's the most creative way you can. And that's where your satisfaction is going to come from. In other words, not from outside in, but from inside out. Yeah. So that takes us into the fourth area, the fourth context, and where we learn a belief that will not be very healthy, very good for our well-being, for our entire life. And it is to do with this thing called happiness. And it's the belief that, well, again, technology is a huge role to play in this today. And I don't know if you've noticed that, do you find yourself going to check your emails and your texts very frequently? Do you do that a lot? Yeah. So have you ever noticed how you just have to get a two-line text, and your face either goes, or no? You ever noticed that? Yeah, I usually have about 40 or 50 managers in front of me, and they spend most of 4 days of a seminar, and most of the time they're all going, and they're texting under the desk, and they're reading, they're checking their text under the desk. And they're trying to be two places in once, by the way. This is why attention management is slightly important. Can you be in two places at once? If you can, I want to talk to you afterwards. So this is what happens. They get addicted to... And I can tell exactly what the text is, almost exactly. Because if their face goes... And they take half an hour to recover... Just from 2 lines of text. Do you see? So what does this tell us? This tells us that our happiness is dependent on some stimulation. And the belief, the underlying belief here that we all absorb, unfortunately, I think I'm not being too general by saying all, is we get two things mixed up. Pleasure and happiness. Yeah. Pleasure is not happiness. Pleasure is a kind of stimulation. Whether it's a text or a chocolate cake, it doesn't really matter. It's a stimulation. And that's not real happiness. Now you are looking at me with long faces. Because that's not such good news, is it? Because when we confuse happiness with pleasure, we get addicted to some kind of stimulation, some body, something has to come and tickle me from outside in some form or other, and then we go, oh, now I'm happy. And that's the mistake, and that's why most of us are a wee bit addicted to something. I think that's why, do you know what's the comedian's name again, Russell Brand? I think he's kind of woken up to this. Did you see him recently? Yeah, and he's been talking about this very publicly. And for the first time, a lot of people have been listening. Sorry? Hey, does he really? Okay. Yeah, fantastic. So he's very happy. But he was just saying that this mistake, this one mistake is what kind of sabotages a lot of our lives, not totally. So what else is there? Oh, yes, yes. I don't know if anyone here has been on one of these success seminars. Have anyone done a success seminar? Hey, gotta get your goals together. Be successful. Be more than you can be. And so we tend to associate success with some kind of achievement, maybe up the career ladder, or some kind of accumulation of stuff, basically. Big shiny cars and very tall houses, or whatever. But for me, it took me a while to really kind of get this, and this is a little bit deeper, is that success in a human life really depends on the context. In other words, you have to contextualize your definition or your idea of success, because it's different in different contexts. And of course, it's different for different people. And we, as thinking, unique beings, get the chance to decide for ourselves what success is in the different contexts of our life. For example, it might be you decide that success for you in the context of how you give your energy in exchange for money, it might be a career path. That might be yours. Or it might be a job where you get the chance to build special relationships and lead a team, manage a team. That might be how well you manage this group of relationships. That might be your parameter for success. Or it might just be, for some people, family, having a very stable, intelligent, happy, contented family. That might be your definition of success. And so success, we tend to learn to narrow in the avenue of production and consumption, I think. Is that right? And generally. And that stops us from saying, well, what does success mean for me? Well, maybe success means for me on the inside to be calm and content when everyone else is in chaos. Maybe that's one measure. And some days I'm better, more successful than others. That's okay. And when I do that, then it kind of takes the striving and the struggle. You know, the striving, have your clear goals, your clear measure, find success, and then you'll have arrived. Some people spend their whole life doing that. And then they spend their whole life striving and struggling. And is life meant to be a struggle? Don't think so. I mean, even... no. For me, anyway, but might be for you. I'm not saying that's wrong. But I'm just kind of saying maybe it's useful to question the beliefs that we've kind of picked up around success. And then the sixth area or context in which we find ourselves in, I guess some more than others, and maybe you don't find yourself in this context a lot, is something called conflict. In the context of our relationships is something called conflict. And one of the reasons for that, just one, is again this belief we absorb. Again, it's from different people, different times, different places, but it's fairly common. And it's the belief that you have to get what you want. To know what you want, be very determined to get what you want, and just go out and get it. Yeah. Now you are looking at me very strangely. If you look at any conflict situation, whether it's between two people, a group of people, another group of people, two nations, two organizations, it all comes down to one thing. The reason for the conflict is one thing. One thought in one person's mind, or maybe in a group of minds. I'm not getting what I want. This is the seed of all conflict. Or, just a little bit of an extension of that is the belief that if you got what you want, I can't get what I want. Yeah. So if you want to live a conflict-free life, I have to throw out this belief of get it all before someone else gets it, if you like, otherwise known as competition, basically. Yeah. If I want to live a conflict-free life. And I think most of us do. But then some of us get a little bit addicted. Is anyone addicted to conflict here? Anyone who go looking, any of you go looking for a fight at all? Do you ever go looking for a fight? Do you know that person who's always looking for an argument? You know that person? They come up to you and they, you know, they're basically saying, go on, press my buttons, make my day. And they want you to say something which is going to trigger some kind of anger, frustration, or whatever, because they're a bit addicted to the emotion of conflict, because that makes them feel alive. And that's actually why we go to the movies. Yeah, because then we can identify with the hero and their conflict and join in with the, yeah. But you never do that, do you? So we're a bit addicted, some of us more than others, again, to conflict. And yet, even if we are, we spend a huge part of our life searching for the opposite. Don't we? Don't you? Yeah. For moments of peace, moments of relaxation, moments of harmony, when things are just going very... Don't you? Don't we search for that? Don't we seek that in some way or another? I think so. I think so. It's okay. It's okay. I'm being rhetorical. I'm thinking rhetorically. Catch you later. Thank you. So, the final area where I think we kind of learn to absorb a belief that leads us astray is when it comes to our partners. Anyone come with their partner tonight? Thank goodness for that. You're sitting on your... Oh no, you do have someone sitting next to you. This is your partner? Oh no, I thought you put your hand up. Yeah. So the illusion or the belief that we learn about partners is you have to find the right one. Is that right? In fact, just one will do. But it has to be the right one. And only when you find the right one will you then know and get 4 letters beginning with L?
Love,
yes. This is the myth of romantic love. And what is threaded through just about every story, every movie, every soap opera on TV is the myth of romantic love. Ah, so-and-so is falling in love with someone. Oh, no, they're not. They're not in love with them now, but they've found some love over there. Oh, no, there's no love over there. Oh, there's a special love over here. It's otherwise known as EastEnders. With a bit of conflict thrown in to make it interesting. Because if there wasn't a bit of conflict, it wouldn't be interesting. You wouldn't watch it, would you? No, we wouldn't watch a film where everyone's going, oh, I love you and you love me and isn't it lovely? Life is lovely. Isn't it gorgeous? We wouldn't pay for that. Would you pay for that? No. Because you'd be bored stiff after 15 minutes. Because we like a bit of conflict with our love. Crazy, eh? So we learn to believe that love lies with one special person around us outside somewhere there, and we have to find them, and when we find them, then we can start living. Does it work like that? I think you know it doesn't. So these are some of the beliefs that we kind of pick up very quickly when we're young from the context of culture, parents, education, our society, and we absorb these beliefs and they just take root. And suddenly they're shaping and defining how we think, how we feel, and how we behave with each other. Would you agree? Great. Thank you for your enthusiasm. So what I'd like to do is to kind of get your brain cells moving just a little bit, and I'm going to ask you to say hello to the person next to you, introduce yourself, find a stranger, because it's easier with strangers, as you know. And see if you can share with that other person one belief that you know you are carrying that is not true. Got it? One belief that you've absorbed, assimilated, that you're carrying in your consciousness, but deep down you know it's not true. It's not real. Do you want to do that? Do you talk to each other in London? Can you do that here? Hello, how are you? I am, you are. I've given you seven examples, so now your turn. One example for the person next to you. And if you don't have an example and you want to talk about the weather, that's okay too. Okay, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's good. Hands up those who need a bit of conflict resolution. No? That's good. So, this is the whole area of unlearning. And it's necessary because, as is pretty obvious, we've learned, assimilated, absorbed things that are not wrong, but I would call inaccurate, and they kind of lead us astray. The second area is to do with growth. Have you noticed in the past, the past 10, 15, 20 years, this incredible expansion of the personal development industries? You know, you have to grow, you have to develop. So why is this? It's a bit like, you know, when we look out into the world every day, in fact, you go to work, you look in your garden, you go on holiday, and it's quite natural to see everything, and we even praise everything, in a state of growth. Nature grows. Nature wakes up every year and it grows. Everything grows. Ideas grow, it seems, and food grows, and organizations grow, and governments grow, and your bank balance grows. Sometimes. Your debts grow. So we have the language of growth, and seemingly the evidence of growth around us. So we then naturally tend to believe that, guess what? I grow. We grow. But do we really? I guess that this is the point where it's appropriate, as I usually do in these talks, to just kind of remind us, and if you've come here regularly, you know this already, of the two energies at play in life. You know, you all know the two energies at play. We intuitively get this. I'm a human being. You're a human being. You have a human form, and there's a being of consciousness. There's matter and mind, body and soul. I say, you do know. There's two energies. One's very physical, and the one's, well, you could call it spiritual. It's the energy of consciousness, the energy of spirit. So which energy do we learn to believe we are? The physical. So when you get out of bed in the morning, you go to the bathroom, you look in the mirror, you frighten yourself awake for another day. Is that right? And that's where your stress begins. It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so you learn to believe you're just a physical appearance. And everything physical goes through the process of growth. And so you believe you grow. Is that right? Yeah, that's what we do. We believe we grow. And then someone takes that idea that human beings grow because they're just under the illusion that physical energy is all we are. We just believe, well, we grow. So, hey, we could turn this into a business by teaching people how to grow. This is where it gets really interesting. Yes, you can develop talents. Yes, you can develop new abilities. But you can't develop yourself. You don't need to. It's impossible anyway to develop yourself. Because the self is what I am. The self isn't the energy you see in the bathroom mirror. The self is the energy that animates the self, animates the form, the body, the matter, the material. Do you get the difference? Do you see it? This means yes. This means no. Yeah. Do you get it? Do you get the difference? But the belief is so strong that we're just this thing in the mirror. So strong, isn't it? Yeah. In fact, there's whole industries out there whose job it is to keep you trapped in that one belief that you are gorgeous. And if you're not so gorgeous today, we can help you be more gorgeous today. And we buy into that, don't we? Because we believe we are just this physical form. Therefore, we believe we grow and we can develop and we should develop the best we can be. Be all you can be is associated with personal development. But the reality is, you don't develop. In fact, the other way around, if you try to develop yourself, you will end up sabotaging yourself. It's a little bit like, let's look at nature. Yeah, I like to use the metaphor of nature. You know, we're very fussy about the water we drink now, aren't we? Don't we spend a lot of money making sure the water is, what do we call it? We call it pure. Because we realize pure water is very good for our bodies. So we spend a lot of money getting the toxins out of the water. And we, oh, that's not very pure. Oh, that's very pure. Have you tried this water? Very pure. Same with the air. We're very conscious about the purity of the air, especially in your lovely city here. And we spend a lot of money extracting the toxins from the air and penalizing people for who don't do that. Because we want everything to be pure at a physical level. But what does that mean at the level of you, the self, consciousness? It means kind of the same, really. You can only be powerful and concentrated when you are free of toxins. And what are the toxins that pollute our consciousness? We've just looked at many. Is your beliefs. See it? So, personal development is not about developing, learning, absorbing more ideas and more beliefs. It's about getting rid of the ones that are already there, that I recognize are sabotaging what I think, what I feel, how I act. So that if I can get rid of all those beliefs, there's not nothing left, actually. You take all the toxins out, and what's left? A very pure, concentrated being. See it? And that's the challenge of what's sometimes called the spiritual journey, or waking up, or enlightenment. That's the challenge. It's not adding or accumulating more to you, but it's taking away what's in the way. And what's in the way is the way. You see it? And that's why this place exists. Yeah? People don't really come here to learn. They come here to unlearn. Undo. So, let me just give you a little idea of how that happens. And to do that, I just need to do a little anatomy lesson with you. Let me do a little anatomy lesson. Well, anatomy is a metaphor. Anatomy usually refers to something biological, but this is the anatomy of your consciousness. Not your body, but your consciousness, which is yourself. And everyone is consciousness. And if you sit quietly and just watch what's happening within your consciousness, you'll notice you have what's called a mind. Yeah, and the mind is like a screen on which you can create, just like I'm creating on the screen of this paper, or it's also a window through which the world comes. Other people, the world, ideas, noises, they come into your consciousness through the mind. You also have within your consciousness something called an intellect. An intellect's what makes you quite different from the birds and the bees, the flowers and the trees. It allows you to evaluate and assess. Is this good? Is this bad? Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this grey? Or all the shades of grey on in between. And within your consciousness, you also have what's called memories or recordings. And these recordings, not in your brain, but in you, the conscious being. And you've spent your life creating many different recordings according to what you've thought, what you've done, how you've perceived, and what you believe. And this is called the matrix. Da-da-da-da. This is the real matrix. It's not out there somewhere. It's in your consciousness. And at the center, well, the center really, to be centered, is to be yourself, is you. And sometimes we talk about the heart of your consciousness. That is you. You are consciousness. You are your heart. Not this heart, the heart of the body, but the heart of you. And our life is really spent creating thoughts and ideas, and then acting, and the records of our actions. And all these records of our actions, another word for all these records, are your habits. Yeah, habits. You all know what a habit is. You know what a habit is? Hands up, smokers here. Any smokers here? Any compulsive tea drinkers here? Tea drinkers? Hands up, the tea drinkers. See, my hand is very high. I'm a tea drinker. So that's my habit, to drink tea many times every day. Because it's the only panacea for stress, isn't it? A cup of tea and a biscuit, eh? Wouldn't you like one now? So this is the anatomy of consciousness. I'll come back to that in a second. I just need to follow that up with the anatomy of a habit. Yeah, it's not rocket science, actually. You don't have to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist or, sorry, as a habit, yeah, or a therapist to understand it. So I just draw seven circles. As you know, my favorite number is seven. And it works very well to explain the anatomy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and seven. There we go. Bullseyes, they say. Do you all have television at home? TV. You have TV, don't you? Yeah, it's okay. I'm not asking you to confess. So you know that the cable that's attached to your television is what brings the signal in, right? And the cable is sometimes called a coaxial cable. You've heard of that? Anyone heard of that? A coaxial cable. Have you ever cut a coaxial cable? If you cut it, you get an idea of the layers that make up the cable. There's a plastic layer on the outside, and then the next layer is a kind of gauzy wire that goes through it, and then there's another plastic layer, and there's another wire that goes right through the middle. Have you ever done that? If you cut the cable, you'll see these layers, basically. So a habit is a bit like that. There's layers of memory, layers of recordings that make up the habit. It's a little bit like in your computer, when you go to documents, you go to documents, and you see all your files coming up, and then you click on a file, and it becomes active, doesn't it? And in the file, there's tons of information. Thank goodness. Every time we open it. So when you, if you were to cut a habit that is recorded in your consciousness, what you would get as the outer layer would be the behavior. And you'll see this. If any time you want to sit quietly and learn to meditate or just contemplate what's going on inside your consciousness, you'll see that. And just behind the behavior is the emotion. And just behind the emotion, recorded in the habit, in the cable of your habit, is the thought. Yeah? It happens so quickly, though. It's just a bit tricky to see. And behind the thought is the perception. Is the way you interpret, which is quite unique to you. You ever been to a movie with a friend? You talk about the movie afterwards. And then you say, wait a minute, I didn't see that. And they're saying, but I didn't see that. And then you wonder whether you were watching the same movie. Have you ever had that happen? And that's because you watch the same movie, but you see different things. Because we all interpret the movie differently. Because where is the movie when you're watching the movie, really? It's in your mind. Actually, where am I right now for you? Not on a stage. I'm in your mind. So what are you doing with me in your mind? Actually, what are you doing with me? Anyway. Yeah, some people over here are going, oh, Mike George, fantastic. Other people are thinking, what's this guy talking about? This is rubbish. Let me out of here. Is that right? So who's doing that? Am I doing that? No. It's your interpretation of me. And so everything that you see, you create your own version of. Everything. Absolutely everything. According to your perception. And what's shaping your perception, your interpretation? It's our old friend. Your beliefs. Your belief. Get it? And there in the center, actually there's one circle too many. There's the center. In the center, there is the T for the truth. Because belief is not the truth. You know that, don't you? The belief is not the truth. The truth about belief is in the word belief. L-I-E. The being is lying to itself. Yes. It's not that the information in the belief is wrong. It's that you're so holding on to your belief, my belief. That's where it kind of goes wrong. That's where the conflict comes from, my belief. Or, I'm right and you're wrong. There's no right and wrong in here. In consciousness, there's no right and wrong. There just is. So, let's see how you activate the habit. The habit, well, let's say someone runs in the room and they come up on the screen of your mind because I'm watching them coming in the room and they shout one word. They just shout one word. Where's my pen? Where's my other pen? And they shout one word and the word is rats. Yeah, rats. Maybe some of you had a visceral reaction just with hearing that one word. And some people, they go, ah, no, rats. And their behavior is, ah, and the emotion is fear, and the perception is, oh my God, this is terrible, and the belief is, rats are killers. Because we learn that, don't we? Don't we learn that? But rats are terrible killers. They've got poison, they're horrible and mucky little, don't we? We go, ah. Do you see? Whereas other people who've not learned that rats are killers, that they're beautiful, furry little creatures, they're going, ah, that's nice. Yeah, lovely, nice, nice. Do you see the difference? And that's why some people react and other people don't. That's why some people contain this particular habit and other people don't. Let me try another one. Someone walks in the room and they say, he's coming. And we say, who? And they say, Trump. See? I told you. Some of you are going, ah. Do you all have a difficult person in your life? Yeah, otherwise known as a DP. Yeah? And the DP just has to walk in the door, and what do? As soon as you see them, you go, is that right? Yes, yeah, you're a difficult person. Now, did they make me go, no, I'm very good at disguising it, actually. You won't actually see that. I'll keep that behavior invisible, but inside I'm going, you know that person? So they didn't make me react like that. I made me react like that because I've already created the belief. God, they're terrible. I've already recorded that perception. I've already got on record the thinking about them. I've already decided, oh, I'm really angry at them. And all of that's been recorded, and all they have to do is scratch. In other words, appear. Because they come in through the window of my mind, and their image comes down, and it reactivates the energy of the habit. You see it? Reactivates that energy, and suddenly it spills out, and I've got absolutely no control. You see? Now, how many habits? Do I need to finish the question? How many habits do we carry that are containing the energy of fear and anger and pressure and stress and anxiety and irritation and frustration? Should I go on? No. Quite a few. And that's why it's as much about undoing the habit, not learning new things, because that's going to create more habit. It's not about unlearning even, it's about undoing the habit. So finally, well, nearly finally, let's do an example of that. You know, if again you reflect a little bit on your life, you'll notice that everything you do, everything that motivates what you do, really is a search for three things in life. You know? Three things in life. Maybe you'll disagree. Is peace. I want us to be relaxed, really. Not peace as passive and walk all over me, but just relax. Love. Yeah. Oh, I wonder if they will like me. Oh, if she loves me. Yeah, love. Oh, when's she coming? The one I'm going to fall in love with. You know the idea of romance. And, of course, happiness. It's the three things we said. Is that right? We search for love, peace, and happiness. Is that right? Do you get that? The hippies were right. The hippies were right. Yeah, they just had the wrong method. That's okay. So love, peace, and happiness. So if this is what you want, we're searching for it, that means we already... You can't search for what you don't know. It's what you don't know, what you've not felt in the past. Is that right? I think so. So that's what we search for. And just about everything we do, I want to go there, I want to be with them, I want this, I want that. I want to relax, I want my spa weekend so I can go, it's all a search for peace, love, and happiness. Yeah? But you can't search for what you've already known and therefore lost. That's why we search, because we've lost. We're searching for what we've lost. So let's do it like this. If I want peace in my life, what habit do I need to undo? Or habits, maybe one or two. If I want to be peaceful, if I want to feel peaceful, can you sense it? Can you imagine? If I want to feel very peaceful, then notice what disturbs your peace. What disturbs your peace most frequently? Anger. Expectation. When your expectation is not met, it's frustration or irritation. See the habit? Now, does anyone else create that feeling for you? No, because remember the beginning. It's not me, it's... No, it's not them. I'm just testing. It's not them. It's me. See how easy it is to fall asleep? Yeah. So it's me. And then the other habit is, of course, comes from that belief, is to project blame. Do you see how we do that? So to feel peaceful and relaxed, two habits, pretty obvious ones, maybe there's others, but there's two obvious ones I have to undo. Habits I have to undo is anger, making myself angry, and blaming others. Let's do love. If I want to know love in my life, what would be the habit I need to undo? What chases love away? It's good. Yeah, it's good. You're all correct. You're not wrong. But the most common one, fear. You ever feel anxious? You ever feel tense? You ever worry? No, you never worry, do you? Never worry. This is fear. Worry is fear. Who creates it? It's me. Do I create it every day? Do you worry about something every day? Just say yes. I think so, don't you? So it's a habit, isn't it? It's a habit. Something that happens seemingly automatically. On the bus, on the train, in the car, at the table, as I'm talking to others, oh, I'm so worried about so-and-so. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm worried about my job. I'm worried about my bank. I'm worried about... You know what? It's just a habit. And that's why we can't know and feel love. Because we're busy with our fear. Do you see it? So the habit of undoing fear restores our love. Okay. Final conversation. You have 3 minutes with your partner to discuss. If you want to know contentment, what habit do you have to undo? And second one, if you want to be a free spirit, you know that moment when you were a child and you mastered the bike and you went, whoa, I'm free, and you were riding down the street like crazy and you felt fantastic. You know that moment of freedom? But it goes very fast, doesn't it? So I want to be free inside. What's the habit I need to undo to restore that freedom? Do you see the connection? So have a conversation with your partner. No right answer. Just see what comes up in your conversation. See if you can explore it. Maybe you'll agree, maybe you won't. That's okay. We can do conflict resolution. Fantastic. Thank you very much. So a quick feedback on the if I want to be contented, the habit that has to be undone is expectation. Close. You could say that for all of them, but this is a specific one. Yeah. Is what? Yes. No, that's a good habit, but this habit gets in the way of appreciation. Comparison, getting very warm. And that wouldn't be wrong. It's what I call judgment. Judgment. Now, acceptance is the correct way. What gets in the way of your contentment? Have you noticed every time you judge someone, you lose your contentment? You lose your inner peace, basically, because that's the foundation of contentment. And so, do you judge a lot? I can pick it up right now. Only joking. And so that's one. There's a few other habits. That's the main one, for me anyway, at this point in my journey. And the second one is to feel like a free spirit. What's the habit that you have to undo before you could even begin to be a free spirit? Now you can tell me. Attachment. Yeah. The moment you get attached to anything, anyone, anywhere, any memory, you sacrifice your freedom. Judgment. Yes. So, now it sounds like undoing. Well, there's a lot of work to do here. There's a lot of habits in here. God, I got to do a lot of stuff. But you know what? The big secret, and there's a few secrets in here already, but the big secret is you don't have to do anything to get rid of these habits. Ooh. I'm so tempted to use the word learn, but I mustn't use the word learn. You just have to be. Yeah, you just have to be. Now remember at the very beginning I talked about time management being attention management. So the art of being is the art of undoing your habits. Is the art. The art of being is undoing the habits that get in the way of your natural state of being. And your natural state is what you're seeking. Love, peace, and happiness in some form or other. But then the question comes, how do I be? Yeah, I mean, that's kind of natural, isn't it? How do I be? So, to finish off, let me just extend these habits. Let me extend them a little bit. And if you notice, they all come back to you, the self. And in other words, they extend out of your heart. And these, like, a bit like hair extensions, I was thinking. That was a good metaphor. You know, hair extensions? You know, the hair starts very straight, doesn't it? And then we put extensions on, they're very wiggly, and then we give lots of style. A bit like that, isn't it? And so the extensions or the origin of your habits is very straight. It's very straight. It's all about energy. Remember, it's just the energy of consciousness. So these habits, they start out beautiful, brilliant, loving, caring, happy, contented. The energy of you starts out like that. But then it becomes distorted. Then it becomes jagged. Then it becomes funny. As it's influenced by the many, did at the beginning, beliefs we absorb in the world. But within yourself, your natural self, always at the center of your consciousness, is what you seek. And now, why have they been meditating in the East for 2,000 years? Reason? Meditation is the journey out of your mind back to the heart. Out of your recordings, your memories, back to the heart. Out of the mind, back to the heart. Out of your recordings, back to the heart. Back to the heart. That's all meditation is. Final metaphor. You know when the flower grows? It grows from a seed. Yes? And once the seed germinates and it starts to blossom, the seed disappears and the flower is. No way can you get back to the seed. Is that true? In the physical world, that's so true. But in the universe of your consciousness, the seed always remains. And the seed is what you are. See? Because nothing in consciousness that's real can be destroyed. All of this is unreal. It's unreal to believe that this is time. It's unreal to believe that other people are responsible for what you feel. It's unreal to believe that happiness is pleasure. These are unreal. They're not congruent with reality. So reality lives in your heart, but you lose awareness of it. That's all. And so to restore the reality of you, your true nature, your natural state of being, to be yourself again, requires only one thing. Moving your attention out of unreality and back to reality. That's all meditation is. And as you do, as you take your energy back to the heart of your consciousness, not this heart, the heart of your consciousness, then all those habits are naturally undone. They atrophy. You know this word atrophy? If you don't use a muscle, if you don't energize those old habits, how do you not energize them? Out of your mind, come back to the heart. Get out of your memories, get back to the heart. Get out of your experiences, come back to the heart. And that's all meditation is. And that's why this place exists. To come and sit and get back to my heart. That's why being comes before doing. It's good. Let me finish here. And just let me check any questions. Any questions? That's a lot in one evening. Thank you for playing. But is anything bothering you or bugging you? Anything not clear? Yes. Yeah. So, okay, that's good. I can do the question. How do you not be attached? Okay, it's very easy. Attachment is one of those habits, right? So if you keep coming back to the center, you... to do that, you will have to detach. And it's not the, oh, I've got to detach now. Oh, I've got to, oh, it's terrible. Oh, I don't want to go, I don't want to go. So it's not like getting on a bike and riding a bike. I mean, I can describe how to ride a bike. But after the description, can you ride a bike? No. So the description's not enough. It's necessary to experiment for yourself. Get on the bike, fall off 1,000 times, and then you've mastered it. And it's also necessary to come back and say, okay, I've got the map. Mike has drawn a map, so let me go and see for myself. That's why I should have said right at the beginning, you must not believe a word I say. Yeah, don't believe it. See for yourself. And when you come back to the heart, when you come back and taste, and it's like a taste, except it's not physical, the natural state of your being, then you know you have been detached. Now you're not thinking it, oh, I'm fantastic, I've been detached. You're not thinking that, you just know it. That's detachment. Freedom. You felt really free. Do you see it? Do you get it? It's good. Anyone else? Yes.
Yeah, thank you for the talk, but I'm really confused as to, because I thought the emotions like happiness and things like that are created in mind, and to feel that emotion, happiness, you need the help of mind to experience it. Now, if you're saying that you live in your soul or being, how is this interaction? How is it possible to feel that?
Okay, it's good. So first of all, I'm really glad you're confused. No, it's necessary. It's necessary to go into confusion. And the reason for that is in your question, is that I've used terms for which I know the meaning, and you've heard me use those terms and for which you have a different meaning. So in a sense, it's about clarifying what we mean. And for me, happiness is not an emotion. Love is not an emotion. Yeah, joy is not an emotion. They are states of consciousness. They're words that we use to describe a vibration of your consciousness. Yeah? And so they're not emotions. They are states of being that you feel when there's no toxin, no pollution, nothing interfering in the way. Yeah? And that's why we're kind of here, is to understand what's in the way. So, when you're connected back in that vibration, pure vibration of your heart, the mind is quiet. It's not necessary to think. You're not thinking, oh, I'm so peaceful now. You just are peace. You're not thinking, oh, I love. No, you are naturally the energy of love. So that's coming naturally from you. You're not thinking it. You don't need to. As soon as you think it, you're not it. Do you see it? Now, I haven't talked about the intellect because that's another kind of seminar, really. But what happens when you do come back is that the intellect comes back to life. The intellect's like an eye. And for most of us, the eye is fast asleep. The intellect's what we use to evaluate and make decisions. Who makes your decisions? Who does your evaluation today? Mostly. Not all the time, but mostly. The media. We surrender. You tell me what to think. Tell me how to feel. Tell me what's good, what's bad. Oh, yeah, okay, I believe you. This is terrible. This is awful. And so we allow it to do the work of seeing and discerning and deciding for us. So when you come back to the heart and restore consistency of presence there, then your intellect becomes back to life and you start to see for yourself. Very and slowly, mostly for most people. But the intellect is what you use to sense, to feel deeply. Not the mind. But as I say, that's another seminar. Are you okay to come back next week? Same time, same channel? Might become a habit, yes. Careful. Careful. So, one more question, and then we have to be a bit time conscious, or I should say clock conscious. No more questions. That means everything's really clear. Yes.
I wondered if there might be a way to develop motivation to return to the heart, a way that we can trick ourselves to return, because maybe we experience those pure feelings, or not the feeling, but the state.
How do you motivate yourself to come back to the heart? Well, the reality is most people have to be motivated, and the most powerful motivator normally, I'm not saying this is in every case, tends to be misery. Yeah, and sometimes it's called the dark night of the soul, or the brick wall moment. You know, it's when you just reach the lowest point. You say, I can't take this anymore. Which is another way of saying the pleasures in my life, which are really drugs, are not doing it for me anymore. Because if you use the pleasures as drugs, you will get high, but then the highs must be followed by. And now the low is so low, you're dragging along, and you wake up one day, just like I did 35 years ago, I can't take this anymore. And that's what makes you interested, curious. What is it I need to change? What's going wrong? What is life? Is life meant to be like this? Is this all there is? These kind of questions come up. And eventually you end up with a question, who am I anyway? Yeah. So normally the motivation towards that is unhappiness, basically. Unless you're curious. The other one is curiosity. You're really curious. Wow, that's really interesting tonight. I mean, I just kind of scratched the surface. If you come in here and do the main course here, you'll go into this right in depth, total depth. And then out of curiosity, you know, don't believe blindly. Challenge everything, not out of resistance, but out of curiosity. What does that mean? And what are you talking about? And just like that question came there. And then you start to see for yourself. See for yourself. It's great. Hey, listen, thanks for your attention. It's good time management. It's good. Thank you. Let's finish with a few moments of quietness, if that's okay. As you know, the custom here is just to finish off with a quiet meditation together. So step one is just to relax your body in the chair. Take the shape of your chair. And then just relax your body very consciously, so it doesn't distract your attention, doesn't pull your attention away. And then bring your awareness to your breath and just use your breath as an object of focus for a moment. No music, thanks, Dave. So just follow your breath with your attention. Complete cycle of the in and out. And then just completely let go of the world around you. It'll always be there. And just let the world within you dissolve into the background. Memories, thoughts, concerns of the day. Let them fade away. So that here I am. Just the I that says, I am. Just being me. I notice arising from the heart of my being is a very natural peace, a quietness, calm. Calm and quiet. The mind is quiet. Maybe the occasional thought passing very slowly. But here I am, at peace, within myself. And yet very aware And in this silence, I can feel the pulse of my heart. Not the heart of my body. The natural impulse to give, to connect, to love. And in this feeling, I know this is what I am. I am.
Shame to break the atmosphere, but the evening has come to an end. And a very big thank you to Mike for a very, very entertaining evening and also a mind-opening one. Shall you share your appreciation? Just to let you know a couple of things that I don't know about you, but I was very curious about the title of his talk. And I thought, but I think it's been fully explained tonight. And also, I would call this the new Bible. This has got all our answers, everything we needed to know about tonight's talk, and more. More and more and more. I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm really going to read it and enjoy it. So, Mike is going to be down in our reception in Global House, and he'll be there for you to talk to if you want to, or sign a book if you wish to buy one or whatever, but I think it's going to be an amazingly popular book. So thank you again, Mike, for that. This whole talk is going to be on our SoundCloud system, and that website is on all our leaflets if you'd like to listen to this. It won't be up for a couple of weeks, but you can listen to it again if you wish, because there was an awful lot for us to take in, that's for sure. So, I think it just leaves me to say thank you for coming.